Okay, very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So now exactly 8:50, we will start our sharing. Oh, 8:30, sorry, my mistake. So we will compose our mind, develop the faith, sadhā, virya. Then mindfully we shall commence the puja chanting. Then after that we will continue from where we stop. Today is Thursday class, 30th of, or is it 29 or 30th? 30th, 30th of April, 2020. So tomorrow is Labor Day, it's an off day for everybody. So very fast we are moving into May. By the time is Monday, is 4th of May already, equally fast. So this fourth phase of MCO is much better because they are starting to relax more and more the condition. So more and more economic activity, business activity can now move. Some of the bigger factories or entity, they are allowed to go back to 100% capacity. And I heard today they are going to release the micro industry and the smaller industry so that they will be able to start their economic activity again. Then slowly, I think they will slowly open up. Looks like the numbers are good, even today at 54 new cases, but 28 are imported. So the actual number is only 20 something. So hopefully we will reach single digit soon. Okay. So let us compose our mind, develop the faith, sadhā, virya, then mindfully we shall proceed with the puja chanting. Namo Bhagavate Sakya Muni Phật. Namo Bhagavate Sakya Muni Phật. Namo Bhagavate Sakya Muni Phật. Namo Quan Sinh Namo Quan Sinh Namo Quan Sinh Namo Ami Tho Namo Ami Tho Namo Ami Tho Namo Milo Namo Milo Namo Milo Namo Pusien Pusa, Namo Pusien Pusa, Namo Pusien Pusa, Namo Dizang Wang Pusa, Namo Dizang Wang Pusa, Namo Dizang Wang Pusa, Namo Pho Pusa, Namo Pho Pusa, Namo Pho Pusa, Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava. Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Sakkasangho Sanghang Namami. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panati pata veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micacara veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Surameraya majapamadatana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Bhajan. Buddhang pujenu. Dhammang pujenu. Sanghang pujenu. Okay, you all can be seated. Okay, we are at page 51. Eh? We will continue from where we stopped. So this is Heart Sutta. Lesson 8, page 51, item 1.3. Yeah? Wisdom of Praajanyantra. For the information of those who may not know who Praajanyantra is, he is a very famous Theravada monk from Thailand. So I met him in the year 1988 to 1992. He is one of my very first teacher, Theravada tradition. But even though he is from the Theravada tradition, he understands the Mahayana practice too, the Bodhisattva way. Then he also has very close affinity with Kuan Yin. Then there is a lot of affinity. And like I mentioned just now, he was introduced to me in the year 1988 by Ram Manda and Sister Sumitra. And I really thank them for introducing him to me because there is a lot of affinity and I learned a lot from him. He's a really wise and good teacher. So under this section, I mentioned some important truth that Vaidya has learned from his teacher, Praajanyantra Amaravikko. He is a Thai monk from the Theravada tradition, a very wise and famous Thai monk during the early years of his cultivation. They are as follows. And I also mentioned he is a vegetarian. The first thing he told me about the mind is very important. He said, mind is mind, body is body. Body is never the mind, and the mind never the body. But body is most important, because both body and mind must harmonize to help us live life and develop the meditation. And we choose to take care of mind, because mind is more important. So this aspect open up my understanding, then I know even though the physical body is impermanent, go the way of nature, doesn't belong to us, anatta nature, empty nature, but we need this physical body to cultivate, to live life, to provide us with the sustenance for us to cultivate. That's why body is important too. We always say that. So we choose to take care body and mind. But most important is to take care of mind. Your mind, like the Buddha said, is the forerunner of all things and mind is chief. Then I remember during one of the 8 precept short retreat at Brickfield, conducted by him. 3 days, two nights, over the weekend, I still remember. My faith was so strong in him and the Buddha's teaching. Then during the sitting, I think, on the last day, the pain at the leg starts to develop until it was quite intense. Then I determined to sit through it. Then I remember what he told me. Mind is mind. Body is body. Body is never the mind. And mind never the body. Then I dare to sit through. Because I tell myself, I recall what the Buddha mentioned before he sat underneath the Bodhi tree. He said, not until not until he is enlightened, he will not arise from the seat even when everything has dried up. But I didn't make such a strong intent. I just make a aspiration. I said, based on this understanding, mind is mind, body is body, body never the mind, mind never the body. I intend to sit through. But even at the extent that my leg shall develop problem and I cannot walk or what, never mind, let it be. So at that time, there is this thought behind lingering, conditioning me. You're not scared, you're paralyzed and all those things. So I was very determined. So I determined to sit through it. Then I know how to relax. Then I maintain awareness. But it tested me. The pain was so sharp. But I continued to endure and relax into silence. Then all of a sudden, without me expecting anything, it just happened. There is a very bright light. It just flashes through my mind. Then all of a sudden, after that flash, the shift in consciousness happened. Then in that state of awareness, the virya was very strong because of the light, the bright light, the virya. Then there was clarity, there was energy, there was brightness. Then I realized that so-called sensation, which normally people term as pain, which is very sharp and very severe, was completely gone, no more. Then I was curious. I said, how come? What is happening? Then I want to investigate. I checked. So I silenced my mind again, and with the awareness and clarity, I went down to that part of the leg where I felt that strong, severe sensation. Then I realized there was nothing there. There was just energy movement inside there. Of course, sometimes certain tradition, they call it the pulling and stretching. It's actually energy, nothing else. Then I realized just that movement, that the energy, that the movement, you may call it the nerve or whatever inside there. Like there is a lot of movement, a lot of movement activity. Then because I was relaxed and completely silent, then the awareness saw all those things. Then I can see, you know, the body is the body, you know, the mind is the mind, you know. And I got separated from the whatever sensation, you know. It's like the body and mind is completely different, you know. They are not connected on. Then I start to understand when I came out of it, that this is the first jnana, not jhana, jnana, N-A-N-A. The first insight knowledge is nama rupa paricheda jnana, ability to differentiate between mind and body. Then I start to understand what my teacher Ajayantra told me, you know, body is body, mind is mind, mind never the body, body never the mind. I saw it so clearly, you know. Then from that moment onward, I was so amazed that this thing can happen. Then from that day onward, 1988 or 89 until now, I have never have any problem with sitting meditation with any pain anymore. Pain was never a problem. That so-called pain or sensation was like a friend. After that, no more. It doesn't disturb me anymore. I can just relax and sit through. That's why after that, 2 hour, 3 hour, not a problem at all. But don't be a hero as you age. Don't try to be a hero. Because as you age, your body is still a body. It goes the way of nature. It is not as elastic as it used to be when I was young. That time I was only 34 years old, or coming to 35. So during that time, my body was still quite youthful. So this is the reason why that statement helped me so much. Then the second truth that he shared with me, also very important. And for your information, all these truths that I received, he didn't tell me one by one. I just keep on listening to his sharing. Then I wrote them down because I can recall what he said. Then all this become my core understanding, and it helped me in my meditation, in my understanding of the Dhamma. The second truth is, he always tells me, we choose accept everything as natural. This is a very powerful understanding right here. Because everything is just from a mind, arising and passing away, and mighty nature rolling by. So not so real, and not what you think. You know what is mighty nature, isn't it? Like Ajahn Buddhadasa explained. First we have nature, Mother Nature, the universe. Then there are laws that govern nature. So everything is subject to this nature's law, the Pancha Niyama. So it's just mighty nature rolling by. That's why it's all condition arising, causal phenomena, dependent originating, causal phenomena, condition arising. Because of that, it's impermanent. Then I start to understand the deep meaning behind this truth. We choose accept everything as natural, like the Buddha said. When condition is set, condition like that, things will be like that. It cannot be otherwise. So that reality is what is. That's why when I look back, everything fall into place and mesh. Even J. Krishnamurti's teaching, he always say, accept what is. What is suchness, the reality of the moment. Bhayam Kathy also talk about what is. Eckhart Tolle talk about the present moment. Present. Yeah. So the reality within the moment. So when you understand this, you will come to understand. You can accept everything as natural, means you can accept nature's law. When the condition behind is already set, things will unfold in that manner. Cannot be otherwise. That's why we choose accept everything as natural. And that is a very powerful statement. Somebody pop in with the screen share. My daughter will remove it. Sorry about that. Padmasri, I think he touched some screen. Then it came in. It's all gone already. Okay. We can continue. So this understanding is very important. I read to you again. We choose accept everything as natural because it's just from a mind arising and passing away. And they follow nature's law. Only mighty nature rolling by. So not so real and not what you think. And the third truth is also very beautiful. We choose contemplate all Dhamma until they are very, very clear. So this shows the importance of second turning wisdom. At that time when he told me, I didn't know it was second turning. He reminded me no less than 6 times when I was alone with him. Every time when I was alone with him, either in Malaysia or in Thailand or in Australia, when I visit him for Katina. I visit his Shunyataram way place somewhere near Kanchanaburi. near to the Mae Hong Son, the border northwest near Burma. I was at his temple, Sunyataram, a few occasions. So every time I met him alone, he will advise me this. Then for one occasion was very special when I went there with another kayamita. He stayed in the mountain up there. He has a very big kuti and very nice nature up there. Then when we arrived that day, he gave instruction to us to wait for him until he finished. So it was after midnight, I think 12 something. Then he met us. Then he was full of joy. He said, "Tonight you follow me." So he took us up with his attendant, all the way up to his kuti up there. Oh, then he talked to us and he shared a lot of things. Then he said, "Tonight you all sleep just below me. There's a kuti just below his, halfway up the hill. Pitch on a cliff, next to a big tree." So it seems later on I was told it's the chief disciple's kuti. So the chief disciple was told to vacate that kuti for us. So a lot of story happened that night. Those few nights when we were staying there, there were this Dhamma end that came and visited us and a lot of other beautiful story. So what I want to share with you was when I was there. So this particular message came to me. He said, "We choose contemplate until very, very clear." Then when we were there, the chanting, the vibration, the nature's energy, the nature's vibration, the stream flow and all those things and the weather, they were so conducive, so beautiful. And we woke up 3 something. The chanting started about 3:30, I think. So the Dhamma end came and woke us up. Yeah, I was fully aware. I didn't sleep at that time. That time, I already had the understanding. I think 1989. So, a lot of beautiful things happened. Then this message of contemplation was given to me no less than 6 times. Every time when I was with him alone. Then I use it. I reflected, contemplated, and inquired into the Dhamma. And I didn't know this was the second turning until the year 2004 when I was invited by Sister Yun Chan to come out to share. Then we have no topic because they want to share the Dhamma finally, no more general topic. I remember the first topic we shared was tsunami. We had the year 2004 December, the great tsunami. We had the Christmas that time. So initially it was general topic, but I used the Dhamma to explain them. Then later on, they want to start the real sharing of the Dhamma in the year 2005 beginning, I think January. Then Yun Chan asked me, "What topic?" Then I saw in the Vipassana Center that there was a poster, I think, hang up on the wall with the Buddha preaching to the 5 ascetic. Oh, then I remember, I said, the Buddha start with Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. So we can also start with the first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. So that was agreed. Then I got no reference book. So I asked Yun Chan, "Do you have any reference printed English translation of the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta?" Oh, he said, "Yes, I have right here." So he passed me the chanting book, with the English translation. The moment I read through, I knew what the three turning was, corresponding to the 3 type of wisdom. And the second turning was Suttamayapanya. Then I realized that was what I did for my last few years of cultivation. Chintamayapanya. Yeah. First turning is Suttamayapanya. Second turning is Chintamayapanya. What I did was second turning. I did a lot at that time. And because of that, the understanding becomes so clear and it's stabilized that my initial wisdom came. That's how it transformed me. Then my stability or daily mindfulness also came. So all this give rise to the condition for this form of mind to receive truth and to understand many things. But of course, it's also linked and tied up with my past cultivation, my spiritual nature and my karmic nature. The karmic nature supported me first. Then the spiritual nature later on, when I was able to connect and develop the understanding, the spiritual nature unfold and I inherited them too. That's how all these things happen. That's why this third advice, which just now I was sharing with you, is very good. I read to you again. We choose contemplate. You can add in the word reflect and inquire. All Dhamma means the essential Dhamma of the Buddha until they are very, very clear. The emphasis is very, very clear. So this shows the importance of second turning wisdom, which is Cittamayapanya. Wisdom born of constant reflection, contemplation, and inquiry into the Dhamma. Then the fourth truth is, he told me, the highest or real meditation. He just mentioned this. We choose aware all action and all movement in the present moment. Then I realized that is the daily mindfulness, meditation in daily life. So daily mindfulness is very important. That's the reason why I keep on emphasizing. Not until you can stabilize your daily mindfulness, you cannot realize the true Dhamma. The real meditation has not started. Because without the stability of mindfulness, you cannot be heedful in the midst of life. And when you are not heedful, the Buddha said you are as if dead. That's why heedfulness is very important. For sati is life. Without sati, there is no life, no meditation, nothing. Without sati, you are like blind, you cannot see. With sati, you can stabilize it to be ever mindful. Then you can see. You can see with your awareness. You can understand many things. Where that type of seeing is the direct seeing, without words, without thought, without concept, without conditioning from the brain and the mind. It's seeing as they are. The reality within the moment. So, number four, that truth is very important. The highest or real meditation. It's just daily mindfulness. We choose away all action, all movement in the present moment. That's it, finish. And from there onward, I determined to be aware every moment, every instant throughout the day. And I did it. And within 2 weeks, the mindfulness came. That's how after that, I start to understand the real cultivation. Then I start to see my own form and mind clearly. Then all the essential Dhamma within the activity of form and mind, everything become very clear. Without the stability of daily mindfulness, you don't have clarity. You are not able to see them. So clarity of mindfulness, stability of mindfulness is very important to see all the subtle mind state, all of the defilements, evil roots behind our subtle mental intention, our own deceitfulness, our own craving, desire, covetousness, envy, jealousy, emotion. Sometimes the slightest movement of emotion, especially fear or insecurity, then cautious mind. Is it cautious? When you are not clear, so you tend to be very cautious. You scared things may happen. So all this subtle mind state, you can see that your subtle mental intention, positive, negative, you can see your subtle fear, your subtle craving, desire, ambition. Ambition, if it's not with wisdom, is not pure. It's a craving. But if it's with wisdom and understanding, then it's pure. Pure means you understand. To realize the ambition, you need to understand the nature's law. Then you work towards it sincerely, without negativity of mind state, without errors. And then it becomes pure ambition. Otherwise, it's a craving to achieve, to realize the ambition. And the way you do it, sometimes you cannot see. You are very unscrupulous or cunning, deceiving. Then you break all the nature's law. You just want to get things your way, which is not nature's way. So all this, you start to see them. That's why daily mindfulness is most important. Without that, there is no way you can develop the true understanding, the awakening. Like I explained on Tuesday night. Without the stability of daily mindfulness in the midst of life, you don't stand a chance to be heedful throughout the day. Because when you are in the midst of life, your senses are fully engaged and the mind moves very fast. Without a stable mindfulness and the initial wisdom, you cannot cope with life. Every moment, every instant, your senses are fully engaged and active. And every moment of sense or experience, your mind will stir, react, and create proliferation of thought. If you are not mindful, you cannot be aware, and you cannot go with life. That all this movement of mind state, which we call it sankhara activity, they will create mental hindrance, wrong thought, and you are not able to do anything about it. Yeah, you can't see. And even if you can see, you can't cope. You cannot do anything because you haven't developed the stability of mindfulness to really understand all this and reverse all this. That's the reason why without daily mindfulness, you cannot start your cultivation, the real cultivation, the real meditation. You can't. So this is very important. Take note of it. Then the next one is number 5. Importance of having a good daily religious routine to train the mind to cultivate puja, metta, sati, and meditate throughout the day. Every day means daily mindfulness. So this religious routine is throughout the day you develop the continuity of mindfulness because of your religious routine. So the way I developed it was following what Ajayantra taught me. He said every morning, the moment you wake up, maintain awareness. First thing is aware your posture. Then from that moment onward, continuously aware how you wake up, how you answer nature's call, how you move, how you come out of the bed, how you stand, walk. No need to say mental intention to do no such thing. When you are mindful, silent, you know what condition you to move and how you can maintain mindfulness to do all this activity. Then you can even tell the thought, now I'm in charge, not you. You don't have to listen to the thought. Whatever the thought tell you, forget, you tell the thought no. The thought may hurry you to go to the washroom because the bladder is about to maybe pee out and other things. But you can at that moment just stop it and say, no, now I decide. I maintain awareness. Then if I want to go, I mindfully go. Not the slow motion type, no. Mindful here means body and mind aware. You walk at the same speed. You do things at the same speed. It can be fast. It can be slow. It's up to you. It depends on the condition. Then when you understand, you do it naturally. Then answering nature's call, everything, fully aware, mindful. Then when you brush your teeth, wash your face, prepare yourself for the day, everything mindful, aware. Then after that, you are ready. First thing is pay respect, triple jam. Then meditate for a while. meditate love, metta, and all those things. And after that, share merit, transfer merit. Then you end your closing puja. It may take about half an hour. Then later on, when you are really good on the weekend, you have more time, you can extend it to 45 minutes to about 1 hour. Then after that, develop the continuity or daily mindfulness to come down from your bedroom or your meditation area, or your they call it the meditation room or altar. Certain people choose to do it at the altar. You can do your bowing, you can do your whatever contemplation, reflection, walking. Then you go down to have breakfast. If you have to prepare your breakfast, you prepare. For me, I was lucky, my wife helped me. So I got my wife to prepare all those things. So I just do what I need to do, my duty. Then after that, fully aware and mindful until I go on to my car, drive all the way to my office on a working day. Then first thing I do when I'm at the office is to sit down, silent my mind, and pay respect to Kuan Yin. I have a poster, Kuan Yin, in my office. Then I will meditate for about half an hour at least. Yeah, I normally go to office early. My office starts at 8:30, but 7:30 I'm already at the office, latest 7:45. Then my secretary was very good. She will make coffee for me or tea. She know what I want. And sometimes she will ask me, he called me Mr. Teo. What is it that you want today? Coffee or tea? So she will prepare for me. I still remember those days. Then when the office starts, I will on my room light, then I will open my door, then only I receive my people or people who queue up to see me, and the appointment all arranged by my secretary. Then I got 2 stenographers and 1 secretary. Then I got a lot of TA, special grade technician and all those people under me. I got 800 of her staff. So those were the time where I cultivate daily mindfulness throughout the day, even at office. How I answer the phone call, everything aware and mindful, and how I sign out the paper, read document with mindfulness, with awareness throughout the day. Then when I reach home, first thing I do, I pay respect to author. Before I leave the house also, I pay respect to author last time when I was under training. Then when I came back, first thing I will pay respect to author. Then if I visit the temple on a Saturday or sometime Friday talk at Brickfield, the first thing I do is after I park my car, I will go to the altar, pay my respect. Then chant whatever I need to chant and share merit, transfer merit, and radiate the fan metta to all. So those routines were beautiful, helped me a lot. Then whenever I listen to Dhamma, I rejoice. Then I evolve the recording of the Dhamma talk in Brickfield, I think for six years. 6 years. So I was doing all these things. So this was the routine that helped me. Then at night before I sleep again, I meditate. But at night I normally sleep first, then middle of the night I will wake up. Sometimes 1 a.m., 2 a.m. Then I will meditate for about half an hour or 45 minutes. And after that I will have my sleep. The sleep is very beautiful. I was fully aware and mindful. So these were the religious routine that I established. So you can also have them. Then the next one is importance of constantly cultivating the 5 spiritual faculty of mind and the keeping of the 5 precepts. I held on to them very, very strongly. I never break them. Then I cultivate the spiritual faculty non-stop. I always reflect and contemplate on the Buddha, Kuan Yin, and all the great beings, then have a lot of faith, even Amitabha Buddha and all the great beings. So all this strengthen my faith, develop the understanding, then the virya become very strong, unshakable. Then after that, my sati already developed. That's why the spiritual faculty, because of the daily religious routine, become very stable. Sati and samadhi. Then wisdom, the last spiritual faculty, keep on unfolding. Yes, I did a lot on the first, second turning and the third turning. Wisdom. Leading to the three types of wisdom, Sutamayapanya, Chintamayapanya, and Bhavanamayapanya. So all this became a routine. Then every year I will have time for spiritual trip and all this thing. And every spiritual trip, I benefited so much because the faith was so strong and the energy that I draw when I was there was very, very different. Very beautiful, meant to be. Like a lot of places that I supposed to go when I was there, even while going to China, I developed a lot of understanding. Especially after the year 1989, I start to travel quite a bit. Then like it's meant to be, all those places. I even went to China, a few of these very famous temple, caves, and way place. I was at this Xi'an, Bai Ma Si, and I also went to Guilin, the nature there, very beautiful, the cave, the vibration. And I was also at this Beijing. Then later on, all the four holy mountains of China, I went there, including Huangshan. I went to Putaoshan. Then I went to Jiuhuasan. Then I went to this Wutaisan. Then the last one is Puxianwan. Puxianwan is what is the place already? Ermeisan. Then Huangshan is not a spiritual mountain, but I went there twice. So all these were very beautiful. Then, of course, Thailand also, I met a lot of great monks. all the very famous monks, even Long Po Tet, Ajahn Mahabodh, I met him in person. Then, of course, my teacher, Jayantra. Then also the other great monks, foremost monks. Then, apart from that, I also went to Australia, Melbourne, then Sydney, Velvet Farm. And also New Zealand. I was in New Zealand too. But the places that I visit most frequently is China because of the strong affinity. And I also visited Thailand a lot, very regularly. Then only last year, I think was it last year or this year? We got a condition to visit Myanmar. I think Alicia suggested a trip, which was very good. And I went with her and Freddy, with my wife. And it was a very beautiful trip, memorable too. I shared some photo at the time with Kayanamita. If I'm not wrong, it's last year. Oh, this year. Chinese New Year beginning. My wife said this year. Never mind, the date is not important. So, actually, I don't have much affinity with Myanmar, but that trip was something meant to be aside for me to understand many things. Then there are also a lot of encounter within the local Buddhist community. Penang is, I used to visit a few places in Penang, quite beautiful. Then Perak also, Perak, a few places. Then as I travel, there are quite a number of places, even Singapore when I went down, and Johor also. So this was a spiritual journey that my nature actually developed. That's why later on when I came out to share, I see the importance of all this spiritual trip. That's the reason why when I came out to share, I start to organize all this spiritual trip for Kayamitas. And a lot of Kayamitas benefited from it too. Because like I used to explain to all the Kayamitas, all this spiritual trip, you have the faith, the Saddha, Virya, that you have cultivated your religious routine and daily mindfulness, you will stand to gain. You know, when we travel as a collective, Karamita, collective consciousness. And when you all are around me, moving together on this trip, staying in the same place, vicinity, visiting the same place, my nature's energy, my nature's support can help Kayanamita. And your faith is strong, you can really draw and benefit. Then whatever that we encounter at those spiritual places, my nature can know and sense that it will draw. And as it draw at night, when you all go back and rest after a tired day, your nature there will draw without you knowing, and you will have like very strong energy in you. I used to hear Kayamita told me, he said, at night when they sleep, very strong energy, then like they are not tired, wide awake. But after they came back from the trip, they really, really like flat. They need to rest for very long, which is very good. That's how you actually recuperate and strengthen your nature. So all this is faith. When faith is very strong, you don't feel tired. The spiritual energy will continuously go in. Your mind state is very different. The Saddha, Virya, and your daily mindfulness, stability of it, will actually draw you. So during the early days, I also have a lot of this type of experience when I visited my teachers. Especially Ajahn Yantra, and later on my later teachers. In fact, the first Mahayana teacher that I took refuge, my whole family and me, was in 1986, Venerable Xuanhua, Master Xuanhua. At that time, the Mahayana teaching came, and surprisingly, being English educated, I can understand all those Mahayana teaching on my own, naturally. Okay, we will continue. After that is the last one, the truth number 7. He always shared this with me. He said, nature has great loving kindness. Nature just give, and give. The air we breathe come from nature. The water we drink come from nature. The food we consume all come from nature. And all of your comfort, your house, your whatever, car you drive, everything, they actually came from nature, product of nature. So nature is something that you have to reflect and contemplate on it, because you can learn a lot of things from nature. And Ajahn Yantra used to tell me, nature is our greatest teacher. When you are mindful, observant, then you can learn a lot of things from nature. The two examples that he used to give to me is very useful. He said, nature has a lot of wisdom and great loving kindness, is it? Is it nature? When the winter come or autumn come, is it the plants, the tree, they will shed their leaves and wait for the appropriate condition to blossom again in the spring and summer. Then at night, is it? You look at nature, the tree out there, which is part of nature, the building, the rock, everything, they don't have fear not like human being. He'll put you out in the rain, in the thunder, in the warm, the wilderness of nature. Human being has a lot of fear because conditions are too harsh for you to endure. And we are not so strong as all these plants, trees, and even the great nature outside. So no matter how the condition is outside, thunderstorm, rain, or whatever, or even strong wind, nature just, without fear, endure. And this is how we learn from nature. If our consciousness and mind does not stir due to delusion, we can be like nature. We can just endure. Means the wisdom comes. We choose to accept everything as natural, only mighty nature rolling by. And then we can endure. Condition like that, things we like that, we have to make do. So if we need to find something to cover ourselves, to warm us up, we try. If we can't, what can we do? We need to endure. So we learn to endure. We learn to develop all this understanding. So this is what Dhamma is all about. Then there is another aspect of nature. So when you look at nature, you realize our human body is also part of nature. Then if you are mindful and observant, you will have this understanding. Well, Ajahn Yantra always share with us the word of wisdom that he wrote in his poem. His poems were very good. He said, if our body can talk, it will make us feel guilty and shameful. Then we will change our way towards the body, the human body. He said, if they can talk and speak, they would speak to you in such a nice way. He said, oh master, he called you the master, where you are the master of this body. This body is just a physical body, a vehicle for you to come. So it's for you to use. So it's like a servant to you. So he'll tell you, oh master, harm me not. Don't harm me. For I am only tissue and cells. Means made of tissue and cell. Very fragile. So don't harm me. Harm me not. For I am only tissue and cell. Have me work for you, for the good of yourself and the many, before I am too old, too weak, and too fragile to serve you. How will you feel when your body talks to you in such a manner? You will feel ashamed in it. A lot of people out of ignorant delusion, they harm their body. They hurt themselves, torment the body. Sometimes they drink to drown their sorrow, thinking that when they drink, they get drunk, they can forget about their problems. So they even come out with a song, Ku Jiu Man Pei, bitter wine or bitter beer, one glass full. So a lot of this understanding, when you develop it, you will become different. Then some, they go and abuse themselves, torture and torment themselves, take drugs and all those things. Then they become dependent on drugs. They smoke and do a lot of funny things. Then some, they go and gamble. Then some, like that day, I think, Dr. Jayanta say, oh, not so bad. Too much energy, what he do? He has to dispose it off by going shopping. That one not so bad. That one is not harming himself, but that one is just to release. Then some, they got funny way to like release themselves. So after MCO, I don't know how many of you from the, like when you are released from jail, what happened? Wow, I remember during my form five exam. Yeah. That day, the last day of the exam, no, after finish, there is a cinema show, no, about the warplane one. Tora, Tora, Tora. I still remember. The moment we submit the answer paper, then we come out of the exam hall and exam room. A lot of the classmates start shouting, Tora, Tora, Tora. Wow, there was so much joy. It's like release from the exam fever and tension. And for once, don't have to think of exam. Then they go for the cinema show. Ticket also bought already. So those were the student days, a lot of fun, a lot of activity. But as you go through life, you can see, observe all this, watch all this, then you can recall, and there is fun because when you understand, it's beautiful. But I was the tame type. I have joy, but I don't release it. Of course, sometimes I also join them, but I am more mindful, more aware type, more cautious type. By nature, I was like that, quiet. So these are the seven beautiful truths that I learned from Ajahn Yantra, and I hope it can help you all. Okay, then we move on to 2.4. 1.4, sorry. Key to understanding meditation. This is very important. The key to understanding meditation is to understand that the body and mind must harmonize and be in a constant state of relaxed inner awareness to develop the meditation. And because the mind is trapped inside this physical body of ours due to our karmic conditioning, so whatever the body experiences, the mind will also experience them through its mental consciousness. This is the reason why the form and mind can experience suffering conditioned by one's karma, if wisdom is not developed as yet. So without wisdom, you will condition suffering or dukkha. That's how karma, the nature's law, can actually condition the form and mind to pay back for this karmic debt, or karmic friction, negative karmic friction. So if you don't follow the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil, do good, or cultivate wholesomeness, and purify your mind, then your karmic nature will be affected. Then when your karmic nature is affected, you will have this karmic negativity waiting for condition to fruit. That's how living being can experience suffering, because that consciousness is trapped inside. That's why without wisdom, that consciousness becomes deluded. And through delusion, you will condition wrong thought, wrong action, wrong speech, and wrong livelihood. And suffering will follow you because you are being heedless, deluded. So this is all related to the essential Dhamma. To truly become enlightened, one must have the understanding to transcend birth and death of this segmented life of ours. So segmented life, as you know, this life, this segment is the form and mind that we have. Like my case, you all call the tail. This is my form and mind. For you all, you have your respective form and mind. So that is a segmented birth. So this segmented form and mind, if you are not enlightened, if you are not an Arahant and beyond, you cannot cease it. So that's the reason why I mentioned that to truly become enlightened, one must have the understanding to transcend birth and death. Means no more birth and death for you. In the sense that the rebirth through ignorant avijja, no more. So for bodhisattva who come, they don't take rebirth through ignorance. All bodhisattva, if they know how to take this way, they will not die with delusion. They will die with understanding. That's why it will just cease. Then it will not condition rebirth consciousness. But their vow, their bodhisattva vow will arise across the same condition for them to come back in the form of a form and mind, but born of pure mind, out of love and compassion for all the living beings. They vow to liberate them. That's why this pure mind that they arise to make that bodhisattva vow is love and compassion. And this one can condition form and mind. That's why it comes in another form. That's why this life, my form and mind arise, I remember, until the age of 6, I got no thought, nothing. The mind is very different. Then my grandmother thought I was dumb, don't know how to talk. In Hakka, I say alo. So he thought I was having this problem. But my mother knew, and my father also knew, so they were not worried. But they know I'm very different. The moment I'm born, I seldom cry. I'm very cute, very beautiful, and very pure, my mind state, very pure, until the age of 6. Then only conditioning start. So this condition that the form and mind come with depend on your karma. That's why we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of our karma. And I saw this very clearly. That's why the moment I heard this truth, I understand and my nature rejoiced. Then I see the importance of taking care of karma. We are following the advice of the Buddha. So all this becomes clear to me. Then we move on. The famous quote by Venerable Quang Ching Lao He Sang. This is a very beautiful quote. He said, 过去心不可得, 未来心也不可得, 现在心也不可得. So the meaning is, 过去心不可得 means the mind of the past is already gone. So it's not a reality anymore. So the word mind is missing, the mind of the past. Never mind, if you understand, it's still okay. The past is already gone. Then 未来心也不可得. So 未来心 means the mind of the future, which has yet to come, is also not a reality. And finally, 现在心也不可得. 现在心 means the mind of the moment, the present moment, also cannot be held onto because of its transient nature. Hence, it is also not a reality too, even though it's the highest in life or within existence. Because the moment you know or experience it is already dead and gone. Hence, no longer the present moment. Remember, I always share with you, moment to moment life passes by. What are you doing? So for those who are not mindful, not heedful, they are constantly heedless, lost in thought. They are too busy thinking, planning, and worrying about life, so much so they never get to live life, where they are never with the moment in silent inner awareness to experience life to the fullest, to experience all of the pristine beauty and wonders of life. They can't do that. Then, since the three period of time can summarize all of time, the whole spectrum of time can be summarized as the past, present, and future. The past and the future, like we are able to conclude, is no more a reality. Your past already gone. Future yet to come, also not the reality. So the only reality is the moment. The present moment. That's why a lot of teaching surface to teach the power of now, like Eckhart Tolle. Then present moment awareness and all those things. Then of course Buddhists will use the word mindfulness, but a better word is awareness before the knowing. Just the pure awareness, that is the deep. So when you understand all this, you become different. You become different. So all this demand understanding. Understanding is most important. Go back to just now the notes. So these three periods of time, as we know, the present moment is the only reality. So the question we should ask is, how stable is the present moment? Vitta is the highest in life. But moment to moment, that present moment passes by. Before you can talk about it, this moment is already there and gone. As a split second is already there and gone. And yet, it is the highest in life, the only reality. So, how real can life be? Because that is the only reality. But split second is there and gone. Split second is there and gone. The transient nature of existence. The empty nature of existence. The unreality. Because it's just a thought. Moment to moment, or the consciousness awareness, moment to moment, finish. Come and go, come and go. That's why that Mandarin song has a great impact on me when I was young. When I heard that song for the first time, 往事只能回味. You can only recall the past. It is not a reality. Even though whatever happened to us since birth until now, we cannot deny that we went through life. Every moment of it really exists. But is it real? Now all those moments is gone. Understand not? You can only recall through memory, provided you can remember. Provided your brain is not damaged. If your brain is damaged, you cannot remember them also. Or some you cannot recall. Because too long when you are young, especially those primary school classmates, teachers, school students, when you meet up, do I know you? Are you my classmate? So if you got good memory, you can recall. Otherwise, most of it you can't recall. Even some of our university classmates, because we have 200 over, someone from other faculty more. Even the 210 engineering classmate, not everyone I can remember, but I have good memory. I think at least 90% or so I can remember. I can even recall their name. But the rest, sometimes you really amazed. You may have seen them, but you cannot remember their name because you don't have much contact or encounter with them. Some completely name also cannot remember. Like I haven't seen before. So, but that one very rare. That one maybe one or two. But the rest all seen before. So life, when we develop this understanding, when we reflect, contemplate, and understand, then we realize what Guang Qing Lao Sang said is very true. 过去心不可得, the past is already gone, not reality. 未来心, the future, mind of the future also yet to come, not a reality. Then he said the present moment also not a reality. 现在心也不可得. Why? There is deep meaning inside there, and he is correct. So when I heard that, I was full of joy. But a lot of people thought it's contradictory. Okay, the present moment is the reality of the moment, the highest in life. Why you say also not a reality? It's not a reality because you actually meditate to realize enlightenment, to transcend birth and death, to realize enlightenment, do you know what you must do? You must transcend even the present moment. Because the present moment is still a mind state, understand? Within the field of thought. It's still conditioned them. To transcend birth and death, to realize enlightenment is the unconditioned. That's why you must transcend even the present moment. That's why even the present moment awareness, that true awareness, the pure state, also ceases to be. Then only you can realize enlightenment, which is Nibbana. So this is the reason why Guang Qing Lao He Sang is very wise. He can understand that. And when he recited that in the CD that I heard, the tape, it was so beautiful. My nature rejoiced. That's why I share it with the Kayamita who were at the retreat. Then we go to the next page, page 53. So in order to transcend life or birth and death, in Mandarin it's called Liao Sheng Si, transcend birth and death. One must transcend even the present moment, which is still within existence and life itself. So to transcend life, we must meditate to realize the cessation of form and mind, which is Nibbana, which is the unconditioned, 不生不灭, no arising, no ceasing, complete stillness. Actually, you cannot describe it at all. It's unconditioned. Everything's you and no more. Not even the pure awareness, nothing. Then 1.5 is understanding. Oh, sorry, there's another paragraph. As we all know, the moment is the only apparent reality in life, and as real as it can be, is just a moment. And the very next moment, it is already dead and gone, and no more. And the next moment arrives and pass away again and again. Hence, impermanent, empty nature, and not so real or anatta. So how real can life be? Remember this inquiry, then you will awaken to the truth. Then why do you worry about things? Why do you fight over things? Why do you want to be right? Who are you? What are you? Is there any reality? It's just a thought. Form and mind against another form and mind. Arguing, trying to be right, doing all the funny things. Whatever you do, end of the day, it doesn't matter. Do also like that. Don't do also like that. That's how my nature come to understand. That's why at that moment when I had that realization, inside there the wisdom tell my nature. He said, do also like that. Don't do also like that. No different. You can go and plan and like prepare everything before you die, thinking that you have done something. But in reality, there is no change. Because everything is dependent, originating, condition, arising, come and go, no reality. Who hold on to all this? The mundane mind, which is deluded, doesn't understand, hold on to all this. Because within the conditioned world, there is the conditioned Dhamma, there is karma, there is duty, there is responsibility in accordance with the law of karma. But beyond that, the unconditioned, everything is not real, not what you think. So when you understand all this, then it can like, at that moment, if this form and mind were to cease or die, no problem. You will not even have a thought that say, I haven't planned my life. I haven't planned for my children, my wife. I haven't developed the will. I haven't developed all this. I haven't, no such thought at all. There's no difference at all. At any moment, if your form and mind were to cease, it's not going to make any difference to the world. The world will still continue without your form and mind. Your form and mind can go and take rebirth if you are not enlightened. Otherwise, if you are bodhisattva, then it ceases. Then you can choose your time to come. That's why I use the word, you can choose to come. Or you are forced to come. Means you have to come. Have to come means law of karma will condition your rebirth. You're at the moment of death, there is avijja, ignorance. That's why karma, law of karma say you have to come. You got no choice. You got no say. But as a bodhisattva who has the wisdom, the vow, and the understanding, you can choose to come. And you can plan the timing, the occasion, the civilization, and all those things, and the condition behind. So all this is very beautiful. And also in the Mahayana Sutta, they have this description of the form and mind that realizes that nature, the true nature. They use this word, liao liao qian xing chang zhu. This one is very beautiful. Liao liao qian xing means you can see your true nature so clearly. Then you are like a bodhisattva. you can stay in that cessation for very long. Then you can time your condition of form and mind to come and take pure rebirth, means without ignorance. Rebirth to the non-delusion type, to a pure mind. So that is possible. So that one is very beautiful. Liao liao jian xing, chang zhu. Okay, then we go on. One point five, understanding life. So this one is a repeat, but it's also good to go through. So moment to moment, life passes by. What are you doing? The problem of living being is they are too busy thinking, planning, and worrying about their life most of the time. So much so they totally miss out on life. That is, they are never with the moment to fully live life and experience all of the beauties and wonders of life. Instead, they only existed through life. They are conscious but hardly mindful or aware. So learn to live life and not to worry about life. This is very important. So there is a big difference between existing through life and living life. When you are not mindful, aware, heedful, you cannot live life. You actually existed through life. Gong gong toa, gong gong chia, gong gong si, everything also gong. So you grew up with ignorance. You consume your meals with ignorance. Then when you die, you also die with ignorance. That's why the Hokkien explanation is very good. I remember Reverend Suwano like to say this. Gong gong toa, gong gong chia, gong gong si, everything is a gong gong, gong one, abhijja, ignorant, self-delusion. Okay, so we finished part one. So now part two. Master Xuan Hua's 8-line verse. This one is the poem developed by Master Xuan Hua. So Brother Theo just briefly went through it because it is not so important. Below is Master Xuan Hua's 8-line verse poem, which Brother Theo advised us to read through before discussing them during the next Heart Sutta class. So he mentioned, wonderful wisdom can reach the other shore right now. The true mind itself can merge with enlightenment source. See, he also understands. The true mind itself can merge with enlightenment source. Then Dhamma and analogy comprise its title, which transcends the relative. Then empty of characteristic of all Dhamma is this substance beyond word, beyond thought. Then fundamental non-attachment is its purpose and intent. And by using its power of eradication, the three obstacles are cleaned away. So these three obstacles are coming, coming obstacles. The butter division is determined to be the meaning of this teaching. So under the Mahayana teaching, there are five periods of time, or they call it the five division. So this butter division is among the five. Then the last one is a maha turning around. This is the prajna book. Prajna is wisdom. The wisdom book. Okay. Then part three is meditation. So this meditation is also quite useful. While reviewing email number three on what is meditation, part two, Bertil came across the 6-hour meditation practices as mentioned by one of the participants. And Bertil has so kindly explained the 6-hour practices to us as below. So this one is to benefit people who wants to know about this 6-hour. This 6-hour was actually formulated by the American monk, Venerable Vimala Ramsey, I think. Vimala Ramsey. In the early day, he has another name. I forgot already. I think Sri Anne told me the name before. I cannot remember. Then later on, he changed to Vimala Ramsey. Huh? Yeah. The monk that introduces this 6-hour practices is quite a good monk. And his 6-hour method or technique, which he also sometimes termed as a form of right effort, is quite useful and good if used as an initial skillful means to train and relax the mind. But as in many instances, they thought the 6-hour is the meditation, hence the problem. Huh? So I will explain this. This is also the reason why every time when they are doing the 6-hour, they thought they are meditating. Anyway, the 6-hour, as mentioned, consists of the following. Huh? You will listen, and if you want to try, you can. Huh? No harm. It will help you though. Huh? In fact, it is also quite useful. But don't try the last R. The last R is ask you to repeat the whole thing. No need. That one, optional. Huh? I believe I have explained it also. Give me a minute. Huh? I need a drink. So the first R is to recognize. So here recognize means when you are in the formal meditation, either sitting or lying down or in whatever posture, while sitting on a chair or a couch or leaning against a wall or something or in your bed. He said, first is to recognize that your mind has been distracted by something. And the distraction can be a pain, a wandering thought, or any tension within your body. So normally you can actually understand clearly how your mind gets distracted. When there is a sensation that you don't like, could be a pain, numbness, or itchiness, or whatever, then that mundane mind gets distracted too. Or to that particular emotion or phenomenon or sensation. Then sometimes it can also be a wandering thought, like you think a lot, heedless thinking. Then you know you are lost in thought. You cannot be mindful. You cannot be aware. So that one distracts you. So your mundane might get distracted and pull away. That's why you are not with the moment. You are not able to be mindful. Then sometimes it's a tension, tightness. You don't feel relaxed. Yeah, you don't know how to relax. So this is what he means by distraction. So to recognize that your mind has been distracted by one of these things. So it can be a sensation, a pain, a wandering thought, or tension, or itchiness, or numbness within your body manifesting as tactile consciousness, or at one of the other sense of consciousness. So any of this, like external sound or vibration or smell, or the taste bud taste something or whatever, or that memory recall something. So any of this can be a distraction. So recognize it. First of all, recognize it. Immediately after you recognize, you must release it. Second hour is very important. Second hour is to release. So to release the mind from the distraction and letting it be without clinging on or reacting to it. This is exactly like what I tell you. Relax, aware. But he formulated this first 2 hours, which is very good, to let you understand that there is a distraction. In this way, it's like explaining it to you in more detail. Understand? Like they say in Cantonese, when they draw until so clear, means already drawn until so clear. So this description of the first 2 hours is very good. You recognize that your mind has been distracted. And once you recognize, you have to release it. Release means don't allow the mundane mind to continuing lashing on it. Understand? Just release it. Don't want to have anything to do with it. So it's just like I say, relax, maintain awareness. But he break it up into 3-4 parts. That's why his third R is relax. Then only after you release it, then he asks you to relax. So the third R is to relax the tension or the tightness or the stress or the whatever sensation caused by that craving force. He said there is a craving force in your forehead where there is like a membrane that has been tightened, because when you grip and hold on to something, it is like that craving force causes your mind there, the membrane, to tighten, and you can feel the tension. Means you are not relaxed. So he said, go there and relax into it. Yeah. But for me, I only learn how to relax. And I don't have to go anywhere. I just relax body and mind. Every part within my form and mind, I relax. So you don't need to go to your brain there. The brain there is the source of thinking. So you relax. Of course, you have tension up there. You can go up there and relax it. Or you go to the sensation, the place where there is sensation, and just relax into it. Or wherever there is any tightness or any tension, you just relax into it. So that is what relaxation is all about. Then relax into every mind state that arises. Even if you start to develop concentration or absorption or whatever through your past cultivation, you just relax into it. When energy build up, also relax into it. Tension, itchiness, whatever sensation, also relax into it. They say relax into every mind state. The word is every mind state that arises. Just relax. Then maintain awareness. Yeah. But he never say maintain awareness. Then he has this fourth R. The fourth R is actually very interesting in the sense that he teach you how to smile. He said, really smile. So like I teach you the mind sipping method, remember? I say, feel, relax, then radiate a radiant smile to help you to relax. Understand? Then you can smile, means you are happy, you have joy. Then you cannot be angry. Right? Then the tension all will relax by itself. That's why you must have joy, mudita. And when you have joy, you can smile, you are happy. That's why he used the form R as re-smile. This is to relax the body and the mind of all tension and stress within. Yeah, if you cannot smile, you cannot relax. Mm-hmm. If you are relaxed and happy, then you can smile. Isn't it? That's why I say, radiate a radiant smile to help you relax. So it's the same. But he used an additional R to describe it. Yeah. You relax because in order to smile genuinely, there must be a relaxed state of joy and happiness. So this is the understanding why he said re-smile. Huh? But in his teaching, he never explained this. He just teach them to smile. Because he know when you smile, you are relaxed. But he doesn't know that there is this joy and happiness. Then the fifth R is to return to the object of meditation, means to return to the cultivation of anapanasati, where he used anapanasati, mindfulness of in and out breath, to anchor the mind. Yeah. So this part, if you use anapanasati, is okay. If you are not using anapanasati, you are using other method and technique or object of meditation, then you go back to whatever you are familiar with. But remember, people who do this are those who don't have the spiritual faculty cultivated. That's why they need a skillful means or a method and a technique to anchor the mind. But he doesn't know that this fifth R to return to the anapanasati is to develop the training of the mind to be mindful, to be aware, mindful of the in and out breath until it becomes very, very stable, until it becomes very quiet, very subtle, like no more breathing. Then the mind enters the teeth. That one all he doesn't know. He doesn't understand. He didn't teach. He didn't share. So this fifth R, you must know how to do. Whatever object of meditation you may end up with or familiar with that is suitable for you, You just develop the mindfulness of it, that's it. And let this mindfulness become very, very subtle, very stable, until the mind enters sati. It means the more refined sati is only possible when you realize paucity. Well, paucity is tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, the silent mind without thought. That is paucity. And that is the fifth enlightenment factor. That's why you have to meditate until like no more breathing. Everything becomes so subtle, so quiet, so still. Then you reach that tranquility of mind, the stillness of mind. And that is your silent mind, your meditative mind, your true mind. And that one, when it's stabilized, the mind enters sati. Mind enters sati means after that, the mind is ever mindful. Then when you come out of it, it is mindful of whatever kaya movement. Then after that, whatever you see is with mindfulness. Whatever you hear is with mindfulness. Similarly for smell, taste, tactile, and thought process. Everything is done with awareness. Well, your mind has entered sati. Means the mind that is in sati will be with the moment all the time. The moment of seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, or thought process, they are all in sati. That's how the daily mindfulness can come about. If you don't realize paucity, tranquility of mind, stillness, or if your mind cannot enter sati, you don't stand a chance. You cannot develop the daily mindfulness. The real daily mindfulness is not what you think. Just do until it comes. Do in the formal meditation until the mind enters sati. Then continue your daily mindfulness with the daily religious routine. Then you can do your constant bowing, walking, or whatever. But maintain mindfulness awareness throughout the day until mind enters sati. So this part he never teach. That's why there is limitation to what he has taught. But the first four step is very good. Help you to overcome distraction. So for those who are still not able to understand, his first hour, second hour, third hour, and fourth hour will teach you how to recognize distraction. But there are some people who learn in a slower manner, need a lot of description, need a lot of tangible thing to let them understand. But those who understand, the moment I say relax, aware, you will straight away know what you are doing already. But I don't blame most cultivators because they are not born with that understanding from the past. They don't have that type of affinity and understanding. That's why most people, I realize, they are quite slow. That's the reason why I feel that this 6 hour is useful if you were to give this some attention, especially the first 4 hour. Then the fifth hour, go back to your object of meditation if you still don't have the spiritual faculty developed. Otherwise, with the spiritual faculty developed, you don't need the object of meditation. Well, you are in the meditative state straight away. The spiritual faculty, sadha, virya, sati, and samadhi will make you develop the meditative state of sati, sampajana, and it will come. You are in the meditative state instantly throughout the day. Then number six is a repeat. Don't do this. To repeat the above all. Because they think every time they repeat, they are meditating. Why do you want to repeat? It becomes mechanical. Then you move on. Okay. Please note that step number six, the sixth step or 6 hour, involve a lot of repetitive doing, repeated doing by the thought. Hence, very mechanical and repetitive, leading to thought-based meditation. If one clings onto the doing without understanding what meditation is, then there will be problem. So a better way will be to replace the 6 hour with meditation. We are the trained mind in silent awareness instead of repeating all the first to 5 hour. This will help improve and refine upon the 6 hour to make it a lot better and much more useful. Similarly, step number five can be stopped once the mind is already trained until it has entered sati. Note that step number 3 and 4 are very similar to our mind sweeping method and metta used to train and relax our mind to decondition one's heedless thinking. So see the similarity. So basically the 6 hour can be a very useful initial skillful means to train and relax the mind and to decondition one's heedless thinking. So with that, I hope it can help you develop more understanding. So use the first 4 hour, then the 5th hour, understand what it is, then develop the training until the mind enters the deep, then don't repeat it anymore. After that, you are already trained, the mind already is a deep, you are already ever mindful. So why must you go and do anapanasati again? Anapanasati is the first category of cultivation of the kayanupasana. So kayanupasana is mindfulness of the in and out breath, anapanasati, first category of cultivation. Then after that, you're supposed to continue with mindfulness of the 4 posture. Do that. Then the 3rd category of practice is develop continuity of mindfulness through sati sampajana. That is what the 4 foundation of mindfulness is all about. That is supposed to be the training, the daily mindfulness. So daily mindfulness include 4 posture, then mindfulness of all movement and all action within the present moment. That's what my teacher taught me. That's why all this can be understood after that. Then note, have an open mind when people share with us their understanding. We should appreciate and have mutual respect for each other's understanding. No more trying to be right or arise any unnecessary argument that can lead to disharmony and misunderstanding. So please always avoid all division and negativity. Please have an open mind to respect people for what they are. So appreciate what they want to share with you because they may be sincere. So you must have mutual respect for each other's understanding. Then there is no more argument or misunderstanding. Then number 2, pure action are action performed without any evil roots or evil motive behind. When you want to be good or generosity to get married and you act, and your action is out of getting merits or greed for that merits, it is already not a pure action and you will end up with no true merits. For true merits are born of pure action that are free of the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. So this greed for merits, a lot of Buddhists cannot see. Because they hear people say, hey, do dana to the monk, very meritorious, or make offering to Triple Gem. Then you cultivate all these 10 meritorious actions, it's very meritorious. Nothing wrong with that. But when you listen and you become greedy for the merits, because you do, because you think there is merit, then your action is out of what? Out of that subtle greed for that merits. So whatever that has this subtle greed is considered an impure action. That's why Master Hongren, the 5th patriarch, he called this tinted merit. This, your merit are tinted with the greed for merits. Well, the emperor was doing that. He asked the Bodhidharma, he said, I have built so much temple, sponsored so much monk to do the translation, the retreat, everything. How much do you think is my merit? And the shocking answer that the emperor received from Bodhidharma was really very, very beautiful. Bodhidharma replied, zero, nothing, you got no merit. Why? Because Bodhidharma is already an enlightened being, an enlightened patriarch. So to him, merit means pure merits, not tinted merit. That's why he told the emperor zero. And the emperor was very angry, because he doesn't understand. He said, what type of patriarch is this? He said, after I have done so much of this wholesomeness and merits, and he said, I have no merit. Then later, another cultivated monk, who was his advisor, explained to him only he realized he made the mistake. Then he wanted to invite Bodhidharma back, but he can't get him back anymore. You know, by then, Bodhidharma already went up to the Shaolin Temple and all those things. 9 years facing the war. Then when he asked the general to bring him back, the general also gave up. Those who have watched the video, you will understand. And when you see that part, you will rejoice. Because the Zen story are very beautiful. Then how he recruited the second patriarch, Hui Ke. When Hui Ke went there, kneeled in front of the cave where he was sitting facing the wall for 9 years, in the midst of heavy snow, downpour. Then finally, Bodhidharma came out of that sitting and received Hui Ke, then asked him, what does he seek? And then the rest is history. It was very beautiful, the way the Dhamma unfolded and how he became the second patriarch. Hui Ke also had this karmic thing. That's why he has to seek the Bodhidharma. Then finally, he has to chop off his that hand, that left hand that has the karmic thing. So there's a lot of thing behind that Zen story. Okay, I think with this we can end. Oh, exactly 10:14. Just nice. Sadhu, I rejoice. Then we can end for Q&A. You can have 15 minutes of Q&A. Okay. Now we'll open up for Q&A. Those who have any question or anything you want to say, you can just pop in off your speakerphone and speak. Then we will locate you. Okay. Anybody? So we stop at page 55. Next lesson will be lesson 9, page 56. Anybody? Make use of the 15 minutes. You got any question or anything that you want to clarify? You can just wave your hand or come in. Anybody? Everybody so quiet. You don't have any question? Or any meditation reporting? Or feedback? You can just wave your hand, then we will go after you. Or you can just on your speakerphone and come in. Just come in. Yes, Ananda. Yeah, Ananda, yes.
Yesterday,
I can't hear you, Ananda. You can speak nearer. On your volume. You can try again. Yes.
Okay. Will it better?
Now can hear you. Yes, better.
Yesterday, there's a meditation sitting. Online by Rajan Vimok. Because the way he taught is like knowing. So generally, I as I'm not understanding of meditation, Brother Teo, you know that I don't do.
You don't have to verbalize.
Yeah, so he has been saying. Then today, when it comes to this 6 hour, he seems he's using this 6 hour method explaining. That's what I realized. But yesterday, I think based on Jayanta, he mentioned that I've been sitting quite long for the throughout the meditation. So I think, but at least it's more clear for me now.
The 6 hour can help you all to understand better, because most of you, I realize you learn slower. You need explanation, a lot of explanation, very funny.
Because relaxed and aware is good as well. For me, it's like my mind is always got nothing to think, man. So it's still okay. But also, the way he explained is like at least gets to know better.
The explanation, a lot of things I add in for him one to make it clear. Otherwise, it's not like what you see in the Hatsutta note one. What they give them one is very, very like skeleton type of instruction. They don't go in and describe. This is after I have helped him to refine upon the thing that he wants to explain, but he can't put in words. That's why I put them in words so clearly for you all to understand.
Okay.
It's already a very big refinement or improvement over his normal instruction.
This R is very clear, actually.
It will help you and many other people.
Yeah. Okay. One more thing is like, for me, when itchiness comes in, I do not, note on it then it will go away. But the ideas of like sometimes numbness kind of things, is there?
That's why you follow the 6 R. You recognize that your mind has been distracted, because distracted means you are no longer mindful within the moment. It has drawn you away, distracted you, your mundane mind, to that sensation that you don't like, the numbness or whatever. So what you're supposed to do is, when you recognize it, that your mind has been distracted, you release it. Release means what? Nothing to do with it. Release. Then relax entire body and mind. He teaches you how to relax at the brain there, the membrane. You can detect that. Okay. You go and try. But otherwise, no need. Otherwise, just relax entire body and mind. Whichever that give you the greater sensation, just relax. You relax, if it still don't go away, then you re-smile. When you smile, it's like the Buddha said, think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. Means think of joy. Instead of that pain, the numbness, the distraction. So you think of the direct opposite wholesomeness. First hour leading to the second hour, leading to the third hour is very useful. So we recognize, release, then relax. Then you smile. And after that, he asks you to return to Anapanasati. But if you already have the mindfulness, the state of faculty, all this pain and numbness cannot arise. You know why? Because pain is a distraction, it's a negative emotion, a hindrance, mental hindrance. So like and dislike, sensual desire, you will, is a mental hindrance. Why did it arise? Because you lack the spiritual faculty. If you have the spiritual faculty, you will know how to relax into it and maintain sati, aware, then sati will take over. Then that so-called sensation will be gone, because the shift of consciousness will come in and take over. And sometimes no need to shift. You know, once you don't create mental hindrance like numbness, pain, or itchiness, well, these are all negative mental hindrance, negative emotion. So once you don't arise them, you don't have mental hindrance. And once the mental hindrance is gone, what happens? The spiritual faculty take over, especially sati take over. Then your sati will go in. Your sati, which is just mindful, aware, will actually settle in. Then it will enable you to relax more. because you develop the meditation to relax and aware.
And
you are aware, you already relax. That's why sati will take over. Then you realize all this sensation is gone. No more. And you feel very good. Because the sati, the mindfulness, will give rise to piti. Piti will actually make you feel very good. There is like no more pain. No more of this disturbance, sensation, and all things. Then that mind, which is in the state of sati, will stabilize. Because you just relax and maintain awareness. So whatever emotion will cease, like anger, fear, pain, numbness, or what, it will cease. But the very flowering of that emotion is the very ending. If you maintain awareness, then the mental hindrance cannot come in. Then you will not labor. But by then, you will know how to relax. When you relax, the chi will flow through. And when the chi flow through, you can see the numbness all disappearing. So it's the lack of understanding that causes all this. And the inability to relax and maintain awareness. Maintain awareness means don't try to know. Just silence your mind and be with it. Then this mundane mind with the tactile thing will keep on coming and disturb you, like haunt you, and keep on reminding you, hey, numbness, pain. You know? Forget about it. You tell the mind, now I want to meditate. Don't come and distract me. Then you silent again. Understand that? Silent again. Then just relax into it and maintain. Then whatever stirring from the whatever tactile consciousness that want to make you get yourself into the mental hindrance, forget about it. Just maintain awareness where you know this will condition stirring of mind, negativity of mind. So continue to relax and maintain awareness. Endure it. Feel it. Relax into it. Silent. After a few rounds, you become skillful, then it cannot arise. Then it knows when I maintain mindfulness without the mental hindrance, mindfulness will take over. Then your mind state become pure without the mental hindrance. And that's how you develop the spiritual faculty, stabilize it. And meditation become very easy to meditate. If your body got problem because of your physical base, age catching up, or you are not able to relax, then don't sit, lie down. Or sit on a chair or on a couch, or lie down on the bed, but maintain awareness. Don't fall asleep. But if you are tired, need to sleep, sleep first. Then after that, wake up, do. So this is the understanding behind, okay? Sadhu. Yeah. You can ask.
It's a jerking, like leg jerking kind of things or body jerking.
No, it's vibrating. It's vibrating. We got energy imbalance. This energy movement. Relax. The key is relax. If you relax, all this phenomena is gone. Because you're never able to be mindful that your mind, mundane mind, has been distracted by all this phenomena. There is the distraction part. Recognize it, that your mind has been distracted to all this phenomena. That's why your question comes from your mind that has been distracted, the mundane mind distracted to all this, whether it's the pain or itchiness or vibration or whatever you describe. That is the mind no longer aware, distracted. That is disturbing you and has become a mental hindrance. So relax into it. The key word is the first support, relax. That's why I say that word, relax, very deep in its meaning. And there's a lot of stages to it.
So basically, when
you already relax, later on when you become good at it or skillful, you realize you are not relaxed yet. All the subtle tension and tightness, you cannot see. You cannot see. But later on, when you are so sensitive, so mindful, the slightest distraction or stress in the mind, it is like magnified until so clear to you. That's why those who are already near enlightenment, when their daily mindfulness is very stable and they are very sensitive, they can sense all this, they can feel all this. That's why they cannot get angry anymore. They cannot get stressful anymore. With the slightest reaction, they are aware. And the wisdom is there, initial wisdom. You need someone to prompt me, and you know what to do. And they will continue to relax. And they know how to relax into all this very subtle stress or tension inside, which you hardly normal people can feel. But they can feel because they have this mindfulness. That's why without a very stable and clear mindfulness, you cannot be sensitive enough to detect all this. It's only when you are in that state of transformed mind state that has the ability to be sensitive, then you can feel all this. That's why you can never stir your mind anymore, never get angry anymore, or never get emotional. You know, because it is so subtle and so clear to you. That's why later on, I remember 1989 when I came out to the private sector to test myself, I can see, even trying to read a document or a piece of letter, the stress is there and it tells you, you want to suffer, read. Want to suffer, use your mundane mind to remember and all that. Then I can feel the subtle, very subtle type of stress. Even the moment of perception is suffering. The moment of feeling is suffering. The moment of consciousness is suffering. That subtle, very subtle dukkha. Your mind, later on, when it becomes so sensitive, it will have the ability. Then that time you will know. Think also like that. Don't want to think also like that. That's why it will just cease. It doesn't want to do anything. Because all this lead to suffering. Then you understand very deeply and very clearly what the Buddha means. Sabbe sankhara anicchang, then followed by sabbe sankhara dukkha. All of sankhara, arising of sankhara, is dukkha. Very clear inside there. But you have to reach that sensitivity of mindfulness towards the later part. When your daily mindfulness is very stable, then when the understanding is very good, then you can sense and feel all this. By then, you are very near to enlightenment. Otherwise, the mind cannot be enlightened. Then it will go into cessation on its own. Okay?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Brother Teo.
Thank you for your good question, for the good condition. Okay, 10:30, one more minute. Anybody else? I can take one more question. My wife alarm. 10:30. Anybody else with any question? If you don't have, then we end. Today we end. Okay. So we end. So we will do the sharing of merits, transfer merits. Then we invoke power merits, and at the same time blessing for the nation. And you make your aspiration. Okay, starting with the demons. Akasata Chibumata Devanaga Mahindika Punyang Tang Anumoditwa Chirang Rakan Tulokasasana Itawata Chamehi Sampadan Punya Sampadan Sabbe Deva Anumodantu Sapasampati Siddhya Idang Menya Tinang Hotu Sukita Hontu Nyatayo Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Deo wasatu kalena sasa sampati heto ce. Vito bawatu loko ce. Raja bawatu tamiko. Imina punyang kamina. Mame bala samakamo. Satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, pay respect to Lord Buddha and all the great beings, the worthy one. There we end. Okay.